morning, everyone. How about that new opening video, huh? Is that awesome? Thank you, Candle Lambert, Richard McDeesey, for a fabulous job, and all the photographers who contributed photos for that. It's very exciting. Well, welcome. And we had a very exciting day here yesterday. About 60 or so of us transformed this room into a design studio, if you will, an architectural studio, and worked very hard on planning out what's possible for Unity Renaissance in the future. It was such a beautiful day. So much love, so much energy, all sort of focused on what's possible for us. How can we let our light shine more brightly out into the world? How can we share this beautiful, inclusive message of unity with more people? At Unity, we honor all paths to God, all names for God, and all expressions of God. And I see before me many beautiful expressions of God this morning. We hold in our hearts a vision for, together, a spiritually awakened world, living in peace, love, and joy. We pursue that vision through our mission, which is, together, we transform lives that transform the world. Let's begin our time together in prayer. I invite you to close your eyes if that's comfortable for you and take a deep breath in and then release and let it go. As we do, we feel the layers of our busy lives, any stresses or worries just peeling away so that we come to the beautiful presence of Spirit within us. As we come together in spiritual community, we feel that presence, that energy, increased and multiplied, running over. We feel our hearts filled with the joy of what we can create and give and how we can serve together. We're so blessed by the beautiful expressions of Spirit that come here and share their light. And so on this day, we give special thanks to all those who were involved yesterday and planning for the future, for all of us who hold close in our hearts this tremendous love for this spiritual community called Unity Renaissance. We bless this day and all that it brings, and we bless the unfolding of an ever greater good for this wonderful place. For all these blessings, for the joy of being together today and feeling our hearts open wide, we're so grateful. Thank you, God. So it is. Amen. Well, my mom, my mother, was always a big advocate of the power of positive thinking. And she raised me on that philosophy and still lives by it today. Well, back in the 1960s, she loved another book. It was called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. Anybody know that book? That was a big seller. And so when I became an adolescent, she gave me a copy and encouraged me to read it, which I did. Well, that book had a lot of impact on my mother and also on me. And the central theme of that book was that you are what you think you are. Whatever you hold in terms of your own self-image or who you think yourself to be is what is going to show up on the outside. It's like, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And in Unity, we call it the law of mind action, which is that what we think about, we bring about. So everything manifesting outside in our lives begins with what is happening on the inside for us. Well, I believe this wholeheartedly. I truly do. And a lot of our spiritual work is about getting clear on how we see ourselves so that we can see different results out there in the world. So I believe that we are what we think we are. And yet, there's another context in which we aren't what we think we are. If we think that we are unworthy, if we think that we're not enough, or unlovable, or inadequate, broken, inferior, we're mistaken. That is not who we are. If we believe that things never work out for us, will never amount to anything, no one's ever going to love me, I'm fatally flawed, that is not who we are. That is the story that we tell ourselves about, that we've made up about who we are and about what has happened in our lives. You know, we all have a story. It's like our own personal myth. And it's based on our experiences and our family and our circumstances. It's a nice story that we continue to tell ourselves, like the story of me. This is what's happened to me in my life or what I've done. And as a result, this is who I am. So you may have a story of having been emotionally or physically or verbally abused. You may have a story of alcoholism, either in you or with someone you love. You may have a story about a physical disability or an illness. You may have a story going back to times in your life when you were bullied or shamed. Or perhaps you've directly felt the impact of racism, discrimination, or prejudice. In every case, these stories tell what happened factually, and often they are absolutely heartbreaking. But they are not who you are. They are your story. You are not your story. Who you are is a spiritual being having a human experience. Your human experience has these elements of what occurs, but who you are deeply is spirit, expressing through this earthly garment this time around, having these things happen to you. But that's just this. That's not this. When we go inside to our spiritual essence, we find that in there is this glorious presence of God. In there is this expanded loving consciousness, this unboundedness filled with love and freedom and innocence and potential. Truly unbounded. Well, we know that sense of ourselves when we're little, do we not? When we're kids, we're so free and innocent, and just life is our oyster. We go out and we just enjoy ourselves, and time seems very long, and we feel that beautiful sense of freedom, and with it a sense of innocence. But we lose sight of that as we become adults. And no wonder, because there are plenty of people around whose thoughts and their actions and their words to us tend to diminish how we see ourselves. So consider this. Albert Einstein did not speak until he was 4 years old, and he didn't read until he was 7. His teachers thought he would never amount to anything. One described him as mentally slow, unsociable, and adrift forever in his foolish dreams. Thomas Edison's teachers said he was too stupid to learn anything. Louisa May Alcott, the author of Little Women, was encouraged by her family to find work as a servant or a seamstress rather than pursuing writing. Listen to this one. Walt Disney was fired by a newspaper editor for his lack of ideas. The father of sculptor Auguste Rodin, one of my favorites, his father said, "I have an idiot for a son." Described as the worst pupil in school, Rodin failed 3 times to secure admission to the School of Art. His uncle called him uneducable. Oprah Winfrey was repeatedly molested by her cousin, uncle, and a family friend. And eventually, she ran away from home. At age 14, she gave birth to a baby boy who died shortly thereafter. And beautiful Maya Angelou, at the age of 7, was raped by her mother's boyfriend. As vengeance for the assault, her uncles killed the man. She was so traumatized by the experience, she stopped talking, and she spent several years in silence. Think for a moment about how different our world would be if those individuals had internalized what had been said to them, what had happened to them, what they had done, and stopped there. Think about what would happen in your life if you stopped at your story. You know, in the cases of them, we think about it, my goodness, we wouldn't have the theory of relativity, we wouldn't have the beautiful statues of Rodin, the thinker, and all those wonderful pieces of art, we wouldn't have Little Women, we wouldn't have Disneyland. Right? So there was something in those individuals. There was a source in them that was more powerful than anything that had been told to them. And they learned to live from that. It was the spirit of energy, the energy of spirit, excuse me, in them. And that same energy is in each of you and in me. That is the truth of who we are. When we find that truth, it truly does set us free. So we get this intellectually. It seems like it would be easy enough to, okay, I'll drop that story and move on. But somehow our stories are sticky. They just kind of stick to us. It can be very hard to let them go, even though we intellectually get it. And Brian Hubbard, in his book, The Untrue Story of You, looks like this. Brian Hubbard, not Ron Hubbard, Brian Hubbard. Somebody asked me up at the 9 o'clock, I'm like, what was that story about Ron Hubbard? No, that's not him. Anyway, he says in The Untrue Story of You that these things that happen to you not only leave you with a memory, they leave you with what he calls an energy imprint. An energy imprint. So that whatever happened during that pivotal event, whatever you felt, is still there. And it's very... It can become something that drives your behavior. And the reason that imprint is almost like an emotional charge and it continues to resurface in you is because at the time that that pivotal event happened and undoubtedly was profoundly hurtful, searing pain from that, that in your own self-protection, you weren't able to entirely process or witness or be present to what was happening. And so it's as if when we go forward, that energy is still there, kind of calling out for completion. Wait a minute, what about? What about? And it resurfaces in different ways in our lives so that we can go back and heal it. Well, I can certainly relate to this in my own life. My story for a very long while was about the pain that I experienced in my relationship with my father, and it pales in comparison to what some of you have experienced with your parents, but nevertheless, this was my story. My dad was a very critical person, tended to pick on me. I don't know why I was the one, but he tended to pick on me. He was very competitive with me, and he was very smart, very good with words, and he had this ability to use his words like knives. Like if you weren't doing what he wanted you to do, or you weren't being the way he wanted you to be, bam, just like a laser. He just knew right where to hit the spot, and he would use words that just felt like knives. So I experienced this frequently when I was growing up and even into my young adulthood. So here's one example to kind of paint the picture for you. When I was 24, I moved from Rochester, New York to Portland, Oregon. Big, exciting adventure. Never been to Portland, didn't know a soul, put everything in my car, I knew I belonged there, and off I went. So when I got there, it was a lot to do, to establish myself. I got to get a job, get an apartment, make some friends, etc., find my way around. So I was very focused on what was needed to establish myself. Well, after I'd been there a couple of months, my dad sent me the book that he had just finished writing, a novel, about so thick, the manuscript, and asked me if I would read it. So I thought to myself, I'll get to that. So about 3 or 4 months later, my parents came, and they came to Oregon for the first time, and I was so excited because I showed them, here's where I work, here's where I live, here's my new friends, isn't this a pretty place, and didn't I do a great thing, you know, all that. So I was very excited they were coming out. Well, at the end of the second day of showing them around and everything, my father said to me, I can only take so much scenery, and then I'm bored. And then he said, you know, your moving out here was a very selfish thing to do. You're only thinking of yourself. And did you think how much you hurt your mother by doing that? You're way out here. We can't get to you. And then he said, the capper. And by the way, all these friends I've met of yours, your new friends here, they're just all emotional cripples. I thought, what? I was crushed. And he walked out of the room, and I just curled up in a little ball on the couch and sobbed. Well, a few days later, or maybe it was a few years later, can't honestly remember now, but he said to me, I did that because you hadn't read my book yet. Now, I just want to say as a little aside here, because I get the last word on this, I did read my dad's book, in case you're thinking, no, she really should have read her dad's book. I did read my dad's book. And what I would say about it is that in my dad's very zealous effort to show the world how well he understood women and every minority, he managed to stereotype every single one of us. But be that as it may, the lesson that I got from that and from that continued pattern was keep the big guy happy and you won't get hurt. I got a few who can relate to that, I hear ya. So then I began noticing that that pattern was repeating in my life, that it was influencing the way I interacted with other individuals, particularly my bosses in the workplace. And I just had this overpowering need to keep them happy and to please them, just knowing, you know, that's what I was there for, to just, let's just keep the peace, let's not have anything unexpected happen, no attacks, none of that stuff. And it also began to surface in my relationship with men, because I was very focused on putting their needs ahead of mine, always, so much so that I couldn't even see my needs anymore. Couldn't even, I'm over that. Yes, I am. In any case. So I really had fallen into this story, which was this. If I speak my truth, if I stand up for myself, my world will collapse. So I just didn't do that. So what I noticed over time is that my life began to feel heavier and more unhappy. And what was happening to me, to borrow the terminology from Brian Hubbard, is I had become time heavy. He says it's time heavy when you carry the weight of the past, and then it's trying to repeat itself, and you have those episodes, and you're carrying that emotional weight as well, and it continues on and on, until pretty soon your life energy has gotten very, very small. And what we want is to become time light, as when we were children. And the only way that can happen is to create completion around what has made us burdened, in whatever way we can figure out to do that, so that then we're freed of it. It has no emotional charge, it's the facts, and we're present and looking into the potential for our future. So how do we do that? Go from time heavy to time light? Well, I'll tell you what I did, for what it's worth. I found a therapist. I went to a therapist and I did a lot of very hard work, the hardest work, honestly, that I've ever done in my life. We went so deep that I remember just saying to the therapist once, "You're trying to kill me." And she said, "No." But because it was such a reorganization of everything that I had thought, because I felt so terrified, it felt that way. And so we did EMDR, you know, with this thing and the tapping, and we did all that stuff. It was great. I got great results. But the day I remember the most is the day I went in, and she encouraged me to feel my feelings fully. Feel your anger. Feel your hurt. Feel it. Let it come up. Let it come up. Express it. And she gave me a tennis racket. And she said, "Feel free to go ahead and hit the couch cushions with this tennis racket while you're expressing your feelings." Well, I went after that couch. I'm not kidding you. It was wham, 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 wham. It's amazing I didn't break it. And I was saying things about my past. I mean, really, I was crying, you know, all that stuff. And I felt a great release. So the first possibility for how you can release your story and your past is to nonviolently express your emotions, or at least express them in a way that isn't going to hurt anyone else. The second thing that she did is she said to me, I'd like you to invite your dad to come in with you sometime when he's in town, and let's sit down and I'd like to interview him. I'd like to interview him to hear the story of his life. And so when he came to visit, I did that. I brought him in, and I sat there, and I was not to speak, which I did not. I just listened. And I heard my dad tell the story of his life as he sees it. And of course, he was the hero of every story. But at the same time, were I to look at it now with this knowing, I would say, that's where your energy imprint happened. Oh, I see that. I see how you were hurt by that. I see that hole in your spirit. And it allowed me to see him as a fallible human being instead of this godlike figure that I had to keep happy all of the time. And that was when I began to relax into the knowing that he had done the best he could at the time, which is such a beautiful, beautiful way to step into forgiveness. The third thing that has been of great help to me is obviously to go deeper into my spirituality and to realize that it's God's good pleasure to give me the kingdom. I deserve to be happy. I deserve to speak my truth. I deserve to be all that I can be, and so do you. And knowing that, and knowing that's what I'm invited into in this life experience, and that nobody's judging me. You know, Jesus didn't judge. Remember the woman who committed adultery, or was said to have, and the Pharisees and the scribes got around her and said that she should be stoned, and he said, whoever's without sin, you cast the first stone. And nobody did. They just all walked away. He said, I don't condemn you. They don't condemn you, and I don't condemn you. No one is condemning us or judging us, particularly when it comes to being true to ourselves and putting it out there. Well, there are other ways to deal with your past. I'm sure many of you have other techniques that you've used. A couple of others that come to mind are humor. We can actually learn to laugh at ourselves. Oh, there I go again. Oh yeah, there's that story again. Sometimes we need to get really tough with ourselves, catch ourselves when we're falling back into that habit, telling that story yet again. So with that in mind, we're going to show you a little video. It's about 4 minutes long. And it uses humor and directness. Let me give you a few caveats before you watch this. First of all, I would never counsel anybody this way. And I would never send anyone to a therapist who would counsel in this way. So I invite you to listen to it, enjoy it, let your heaviness feel a little bit lighter. And you may think of it as some of the messaging that goes on inside of your own head, perhaps your higher power trying to get you to wake up at the other, but at the same time, that energy imprint holding on for dear life. So enjoy.
Just have a seat. And, let me tell you a bit about our billing. I charge $5 for the first 5 minutes, and then absolutely nothing after that. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Too good to be true, as a matter of fact.
Well, I can almost guarantee you that our session won't last the full 5 minutes. Now, we don't do any insurance billing, so you would either have to pay in cash or by check.
Wow, okay.
And I don't make change.
All right.
And go.
Go.
Well, tell
what?
Tell me about the problem that you wish to address.
Oh, okay. Well, I have this fear of being buried alive in a box. I start thinking about being buried alive, and I begin to panic.
Has anyone ever tried to bury you alive in a box?
No, but truly thinking about it does make my life horrible. I mean, I can't go through tunnels or be in an elevator or in a house, anything boxy.
So what you're saying is you're claustrophobic.
Yes, that's it.
All right, well, let's go, Catherine. I'm going to say two words to you right now. I want you to listen to them very, very carefully. Then I want you to take them out of the office with you and incorporate them in into your life.
Well, shall I write them down?
Well, if it makes you comfortable, it's just two words. Most we find most people can remember them.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, you're there.
Stop it!
I'm sorry?
Stop it!
Stop it?
Yes. S-T-O-P, new word, I-T.
So, what are you saying?
You know, it's funny. I say two simple words, and I cannot tell you the amount of people who say exactly the same thing you're saying. I mean, this, you know, this is not Yiddish, Catherine. This is English. Stop it.
So, I should just stop it.
There you go. I mean, you don't want to go through life being scared of being buried alive in a box, do you? I mean, that sounds frightening.
It is.
Then stop it!
I can't. I mean, it's been with me since childhood.
No, we don't go there. Just stop.
So I should just stop being afraid of being buried alive in a box.
You got it. Good go. Well, it's only been 3 minutes, so that will be $3.
I only have a five, so.
Well, I don't make change.
Then I guess I'll take the full 5 minutes.
Fine. All right. Well, what other problems would you like to address?
I'm bulimic. I stick my fingers down my throat.
Stop it! Nut of some kind? Don't do that.
But I'm compelled to. My mom used to call me
fatty. No. No, we don't go there.
But I've been having this dream.
No, we don't go there either.
But my horoscope did say...
We definitely don't go there. Just stop it. What else?
Well, I have self-destructive relationships with men.
Stop it! You want to be with a man, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, yes.
Well, then stop it. Don't be such a... big baby.
I wash my hands a lot.
That's all right.
It is?
I wash my hands all the time. There's a lot of germs out there. Uh-huh. Yeah, don't worry about that one.
Ah, if only it were so easy, right? But you get the message. You're not your story. You are not these things that have happened to you or what people have said. You're not what you've done in the past. You're something so, so much greater than that. Can you feel that in this moment? I see it in you every single time I look into your faces, and I know you see it in one another. And now I challenge you to see it in yourself, to know that you are something divine. You are spirit in expression. And that's something to think about. On to our meditation. I invite you to take a deep breath in and then let it go. Feel this great energy of life within you. The sense of life wanting to press out even more through you and to express in ever abundant life. I invite you to take another deep breath in, and as you let it go, just feel yourself settle into this calm, beautiful, spacious place of peace at the heart of your being. Feel in that place the untouched, untarnished, divine being that you are. Allow yourself to feel that great love enfolding you, that great comfort and strength, the light of your own integrity, all of the universe pulling for you. Allow yourself to feel this time lightness with an open heart as you tune in to your own innate wisdom and experience this presence deeply in the silence. We allow ourselves to know the truth of who we really are and to revel in that. To know that we have capacities, potential, possibilities ahead of us, in us, more than we can even imagine. So step by step, we let go of what has hurt us or diminished us or restricted us in the past and step forward into a bright new day, a bright new life. And for all these blessings, for the joy of sharing our journey, we are so grateful. And so it is. Amen.